Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Sports Tonight brought to you by Bradford White Water Heaters of Amber, Pennsylvania. Purchase a water heater, log on to bradfordwhite.com. Tampa Bay Golf and Country Club, give Tim Baker a call, 352-588-5454. The Abbey Course, which the greens are in good shape up there, give Tom a call, 352-588-2016. And the Tampa Bay Storm plays a big game this coming Saturday night against Portland. Tickets available, call 813-301-6600. Or log into TampaBayStorm.com. Frank, when the God Bless America played big game for the Philadelphia Flyers, game number 7 versus the dreaded New York Rangers. Let's go Flyers and Vinny the Cavalier, Adam Hall. But mixed emotions if you're a Lightning fan. Who do you vote for in this game? Marty St. Louis and New York Rangers, the Vinny the Cavalier and the Philadelphia Flyers. And Frank, with my heart, I got to go for the Flyers. Born and raised there, paid Mr. Snyder for 30-some years of season tickets for the Philadelphia Flyers. I got to go with my boys, the Philadelphia Flyers, and to win that hockey game tonight. Of course, Tampa Bay Rays are playing up at Boston, weather permitting up there. It's really dismal up there.
Flyers.
I'd like to walk to their program and let the legend who is in Philadelphia with those dreary conditions, Mr. Roger Handler. Roger, good evening, sir.
How are you, Tom and Frank? It is a miserable night in the Delaware Valley. Flooding, people being rescued, I heard on the KYW, 30 to 40 in Montgomery County alone.
Oh.
Which got stuck into major puddles.
Oh, my God. It's terrible up there in that for the. Because I know Cleveland area had a tornado warning in Richmond County. It's 30 miles south of Cleveland. They had a tornado warning up there, and that tornado touched down. Frank, we know we have the sauna in Tampa Bay right now, 80 degrees, humidity up to 80%. We got the summer started a couple weeks early, Roger.
Well, I think, you know, Frank was saying earlier that Route 10 was knocked out, and Pensacola's been hit really hard. You fellas know more about that down there.
Pensacola got something like a foot and a half of water, Roger, and Tommy, and going back to your opening, Tommy, the Phillies, Red Sox, Yankees, all those games have been postponed. The Yankees series with Seattle and the Rangers, the Red Sox series, I think they're both, the Yankees definitely are going to play a doubleheader on Thursday, and weather permitting, because Seattle doesn't come back. And I think the same thing is going to hold true in Boston, although I don't believe they announced doubleheader there yet. But all games have been canceled.
I'd like to welcome you to
the Orioles game two with canceled tonight, too, in Baltimore.
Yes. I'd like to welcome to Philadelphia legend, Mr. Don Henderson. Game seven is talking to Sriracha. Game seven, Flyers Rangers doesn't get any better. I remember that in 1974, the Ed Van Impe fluttering pucks past Eddie Jockman to get the Flyers in the Stanley Cup finals. And that was a great series. This series has been great, but I still remember 74. Because the Rangers had John Rattel, Rod Gilbert, Eddie Jockerman, Brad Park, and the Flyers were up-and-coming team up there in that site. Let's go Flyers. I know the Rangers win, Lightning gets a first-round draft choice, but I'm going for my roots, guys. You got to see Let's Go Flyers and Mr. Ed Snyder.
Well, I'll be watching that game with a lot of interest, but before we talk about the good things, and that's the Flyers, we have to talk about one of Frank's classmates, Dr. Jack Ramsey passed away.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to have to devote this show to Dr. Jack Ramsey, just an outstanding St. Joe alum. Not only that, but a longtime basketball coach there, general manager and coach of the 76ers, Cleveland, won the NBA championship out in Portland with Bill Walton and so forth. So I think we ought to write at the top of the show a salute to Dr. Jack Ramsey.
By all means, son, that's a great call.
That's a good point about that Portland win, because that team also included another Philadelphia legend, Corky Calhoun from University of Pennsylvania.
That's right.
And the fight in the second quarter, I believe it was second quarter, our broadcast came, and I can't remember whether it was second quarter or third, Darryl Dawkins got into that fight, and the 76ers were up two games to nothing. And everybody thought they were going to come back to Philadelphia and win that sixth game and go on from there, but it didn't happen. The 76ers lost. A lot of internal combustion on the 76ers after that fight with Darryl Dawkins, and they lost the series.
But I had the honor of being coached by Dr. Jack Ramsey my freshman and sophomore year at St. James. And then the person he brought on to help us also, Jack, I finished out my junior and senior year under Coach Jack McKinney. And then Jackie went up to St. Joe's with him. And then, of course, the 76ers and then on to Portland himself. Dr. Ramsey was probably the I had him for math in school, and then I had him on the court. The guy had a brain that just never stopped. He had a personality that never stopped, and he had a fantastic way with his players. I don't care if you were the very best player or the very worst player, you never knew it, because Jack always made you feel fantastic.
Well, I think that's absolutely true, and he proved himself in so many different areas. As you said, starting off in high school and then going on to St. Joe's, and not only coaching there, but moving on to the – everything he touched. But lastly but not leastly, a great analyst, both in the NBA and in college basketball. The games he did on ESPN, he was an analyst out of Miami for the Miami Heat for a couple of years. I didn't realize that he lived in Naples in the end. He died in Naples. I didn't realize that was where he lived. I always knew him as living right outside of Atlantic City there where Matty Gukas lives.
Yeah, he lived about – He lived about a mile from another fantastic coach, Errol Parseghian.
Oh, okay.
They both lived within a mile of each other. It was one course to another course, but you know, Eric is another guy that I put on a pedestal because even though he's still going out and giving speeches, anything that comes in goes into a fund to help find. He had three grandchildren that were that died at a very young age of a disease that just was ranged in their family, and he puts everything he's got into it, and he's another guy you got to take your hat off to. And you know what?
Yeah, another one is Jack. You talked about Jack McKinney a minute ago. Jack, of course, right. was a protege of Dr. Right. Jack Ramsey, and followed him, and finally wound up his last coaching assignment was in Indiana, but unfortunately he had that bicycle accident, and boy, oh boy, he came back to coach, but he was right. never the same as he was in the early days.
Well, you know, the other guy that was under Dr. Ramsey that made very well is Donnie DeJulia. And Donnie played with me at St. James and then at St. Joe's, and then Donnie went on to be the coach and then the athletic director. In fact, he's still the athletic director at St. Joe's.
That's right.
And he's a real class act, guys. I met him many times, and we had some relatives, some kids visiting, and I called up the office, and I'll tell you what, the tickets for the kids right from Don DeJulia were over at Hawk Hill. Wonderful guy.
Oh,
yep.
It's
hey, guys,
a sad
we're joined by we're joined by our favorite celebrity coach, Coach Lawrence Samuels.
Lawrence, welcome aboard, sir.
How you doing, fellas?
How are you doing? Yes.
Yeah. I'm doing fine. We're practicing inside, and I think that's going to benefit us this week. So I'm looking forward to this weekend and looking forward to get back on track and get our guys get us a victory on the weekend. That's our key.
It's going to happen, Lawrence. I'm predicting a great victory, 59-29 over this Portland team. Big night coming up. A lot of great groups will be there, Lawrence. And I wish it was Saturday night right now, Wednesday night doing this show. I want to be involved in watching a great football game and watching a great Storm victory on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The guys are still upbeat. You know, we lost some close games. You know, and what we've been stressing this week is to finish and play all three phases of the ball game. And the guys, we understand that watching film and looking back on it, one phase always breaks down for us, and we're trying to correct that. And if we correct that, we should be able to come out victorious this weekend.
Oh, that's great news. What about Michael Lindsay, Lawrence? He broke George LaFerrance's all-time kickoff return yards. I mean, that's a great tribute for Michael Lindsay. He put so much hard work and emphasis in film watching and studying the game of football.
Mike's a very hard worker, and he's a joy to have on the team. He accepts any role that you give to him, and he's going to be rewarded this week. We're going to I'm going to reward him and put him in a starting role again. So. Hopefully he'll be able to make some big plays on the offensive side for us. And, you know, he fills in on defense, and he does kick returning for us. He does a lot. So, you know, he covers kicks also. So Mike does a lot for a team, and it's just a credit to his hard work to actually be able to break George LaFrance's record. You know, George has been a great player in this league for a long time. And, you know, he had many records. And for Mike to accomplish breaking one of them, and it's huge for Mike.
Oh, it's just fantastic.
We were told that there was the reason that Michael was able to do that was that someone was allowed to get in the middle of the huddle and go, woo! Was that correct?
Oh, no.
Well, time is a part of the defensive secondary. And every time he gets in the middle of those guys when they break down at the end of practice, good things happen. So we're going to make sure he's in that secondary because they've been beat up pretty bad these last couple of weeks. So
right.
We're going to get Tommy out there and get him to woo. did a little dance that they do at the end of practice, and it'll rub off on, and then, you know, good things happen for us.
Lawrence, when we went on Saturday, I got to do it every practice now to keep our streak going. If Marty St. Louis says I got to give speeches in front of the Lightning, I do whatever it takes for the Storm to go woo and win some football games on Saturday.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You know, and the good thing about it is that although we're one game under 500, we win this here and we go to a bye week. And
right.
The bye week is huge for us. Because, you know, we have a lot of guys injured, and you'll see a lot of different faces out there this weekend. But, you know, they're going to get the job done. They've been practicing hard, and like I said, it's, the benefit is for us playing inside and practicing inside. We get to work on a lot of different things and get ready for the weekend on Saturday night.
Well, Lawrence, what I've seen today, practice was a great practice today. Everybody was upbeat, and tempo up there. The players had a good time, and once I could tell, we have a good practice, players are upbeat, great results come on Saturday night.
You know, that's a credit to our team. They're not getting down on themselves, and although, like, you know, we're one game from 500, but we're in second place in the division. So with that said, you know, they know that a couple wins away. From getting back on the top of this thing and controlling their own destiny. So there's still a lot of football
Coach,
to be played, and we just Coach, don't want
to how much,
down
how much time do you have to actually scout Portland? Because new team, new organization, do you have any time? Do they do any videotape and so forth to work on taking a look at the team or not?
Well, they've played 6 ball games. They won one, but they beat a good Jacksonville team last week now. So we're not going to underestimate these guys. They're very skilled, and they're experimenting just like we are. You know, they got a lot of new faces, a lot of new guys, and they're trying to put the pieces together too. But I think they put together a solid win last week, and just watching their 6 ball games, just going back doing film work, they've improved each and every week. So it's. This, you know, we throw the records out of the way. This still is a professional league, you know, professional football league. So any team can win. So we're not going to underestimate these guys, and they're coming in our house. So you know, we're just going to do everything in our power to get a Storm victory on the weekend in front of our group and our fans, and you know, just get back on track.
Well, that's amazing. We're going to get on track. In a big mouth, Michael Lynch's 4 touchdowns. I'm going to go with Maury Jackson right now for 5 touchdowns, Lawrence. That's my prediction. And every time I predict good, we're going to win a football game. Like I said, I will show Saturday night already. I want to get this week over with right now. Get play some football.
That's right. We're going to get going. You know, just be patient, Tommy.
I know. But Lawrence, you should know me by now. I want to get it going now. You should know me by now.
I know.
Hey, Lawrence, I'm gonna break the news to you now on the radio program. I should have told you that this afternoon or this morning, but I was just a thousand things in my mind. Just confirmed a day on June 22nd for Tampa Bay Storm Day at Legoland. That's the old Cypress Gardens up there.
All right. Okay, all right. Let's do that.
We just confirmed that players of the Storm, players and the Storm coaches, they're going to take care of you guys. And Storm fans will get a reduced rate.
That's awesome.
I wanted to break it. I want to tell you that today, but I figure I'll break it to you when you're on the program. And Ben will have everything all detailed when once the day gets closer for you.
That's all right. Thanks, Tommy. I appreciate it, man.
I remember the last time we were out there.
I got a quick question for you. You know, congratulations on everything you've done. I mean, you know, you're just a real asset, and the team's lucky to have you. What's been the biggest challenge this year? And, you know, you get off to a good start, then you have like a lull. What is your biggest challenge with the team?
Well, right now, the biggest challenge with us right now is just finding consistency. I think that, you know, throughout the years when I was back when I was playing, we're very consistent. You know, people expected us to win. on the weekend, and we expect it to win. And we're just trying to find consistency everywhere. With that said, we brought back our old kicker, Juan Barndera. So we signed him this week. We're looking for consistency in the kicking day. We're looking for consistency in the secondary. You know, the past couple of weeks, the secondary has been a little down. You know, although it's arena football, but we expect a little bit more. So we're going to have some different faces back there this weekend, some guys that you know, it's an open door thing, and we're going to give guys an opportunity to be consistent, basically. We're looking for consistent play on the offensive side, the quarterback play, the receiver running routes, and the guys up front. It's a total package. We're trying to put the total package together, and once we get there, we have the players to do it. We just have to keep searching and you know, find that team chemistry that works for us to make us victorious on the weekend, and we're almost there. We're not. One thing you gotta look at is that we're not getting beat bad. It's just a couple of mistakes in certain areas of the ball game. One of the things that we're really talking about as a coaching staff is winning the fourth quarter. We win the fourth quarter last week. We win the game. It's a good Spokane team.
Right.
So we're not far away. You know, and we don't want to be so down on the guys for you know, losing, but we understand as coaches it can go either way in arena football. But with that said, we're just looking for more consistency out of the fellas, and they know it, and that's what we want, and we know that's what it takes to win ball games.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I feel that in the arena league, that one little mistake can multiply much more than it can in, like, college and pro football because of the speed of the game and how quick something happens, and it can just turn the flow, and it can be, like, not just one touchdown, can be two touchdowns or more.
And that's what happened to us the other night. If you look at it, if we score that touchdown with the 10 seconds left on the clock before half, we go in up at least 8 points. You know, we throw the interception. They come out, and they get the possession. And they go down, and they score. Now we're playing catch-up. So
that's
how fast things can turn around. Our guys, you know, we're young, but we're understanding the game a little bit more week after week. And we're understanding that we can't make these type of mistakes. Those are the mistakes that beat you. And in the past, that's the things that we knew as a veteran team going in. We can't create those type of mistakes. Otherwise, if we did create a mistake like that, we have to find a way to make it up. And that's one thing we're teaching these guys now. If something bad happens, we have to learn how to face adversity, and we have to learn how to go out and make it up some kind of way. It need to be an onside kick or a defensive turnover, causing a turnover on their half and getting it back for us. So anytime we give up a possession, we have to get it back. Our guys understand that, and we're learning as the season goes on.
You'll get it done. There's no doubt about it.
Yes. Lawrence, thank you so much for your time, sir. I'm looking forward to seeing you in the Winner's Circle on Saturday night, and always the best, Lawrence, and thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming on this week, and we'll talk to you next week, Lawrence. Always a pleasure, sir.
All right, Tommy, thanks.
See you tomorrow, Coach.
Good luck. You're back in Philadelphia, which is great. Unfortunately, to the best of my knowledge, and I've checked all the channels, we can't get the Flyers game.
No,
here, so
no,
you guys,
no, you can't
what
get
you
it.
Have
it's
what do you have as a score?
Yeah, I'll get a score for you in a minute. 0-0
right now.
Phone. What is it?
0-0.
I think the game just started, so.
Yeah, it started at 7 o'clock. You're right. And I'll tell you, I just made the transition from my car to the hotel room, and they have DirecTV, so, of course, we don't get it because it's Comcast Sportsnet that's televising it.
Uh-oh.
And, but I'll tell you something, Don. You know this area as well as I do, and as many times as you've taken 195, I'm in the New Hampton Inn at exit 7 on 195 right near the turnpike. It's only been open three months. But right next to it, did you ever see that indoor bubble that they play all kinds of games? It's right next to the hotel, right off of 195.
Right. I have seen that.
You have seen it, yeah. Then you know that was there before the hotel, obviously. But I had never seen it before. Of course, you know, we moved out of the area, 6 years ago. But I've been over 195 a few times, but I never noticed it. But it's quite a venue because I saw cars driving in there this morning when I left early this morning.
Hey guys,
wow.
I'm joined by Coach Dave.
They can do anything
Marino.
In there, and they also can beat the weather there. You know,
that's right. Like tonight, right?
Right.
Oh, geez.
Hey guys, we're joined by Coach Dave Marino from Palmetto High School. Coach, how you doing?
Hey, doing good. Frank, how you doing?
We're doing great. Doing great.
Welcome aboard, Coach. We haven't talked to you in a while. So, how was your football year, and what are you working on the spring program right now?
Yeah, we just finished up our off-season conditioning program, and then we actually start tomorrow's the first day of spring practice.
Hmm.
So we get 20 days to actually we get 19 practices, including our spring jamboree, you know, our spring football game. We'll see how far we've come from last season. You know, we got some young kids that are going to have to step up and fill some spots. It's, you know, typical high school football. You know, you know, one year you have maybe a quarterback returning or a tailback, and you don't have the other returning. So, you know, you're always funneling through new kids, younger kids, and it's an exciting time because, you know, whether it's in college or in the pros or at the high school level, it's always good to have spring and OTAs and mini camps and just see who's going to be able to help your team out.
Well, you're talking about getting away from me. How many do you have coming back?
Well, we got on offense, we have our quarterback back, and we got three of our receivers coming back, which is good to build around. And our tailbacks, he got some reps. You know, obviously the big tailback that we had last year, Josh Hicks, he's the one that's, you know, going to Rutgers. And so, you know, but like I said, this kid that we got coming back, he got some substantial amount of carries and quality carries. You know, Josh had, you know, hurt his ankle in week 8, and so basically he missed week 8, 9, and 10. So like I said, during that 3-week run, this kid, Quincy Washington, you know, really got some valuable reps. He's a tough kid, got good vision, good balance, and really sees the holes and makes cuts, you know, very quickly, you know, can stop on a dime. So we're looking forward to see what he can do in that full-time role now. He was a little bit undersized, so, you know, durability is going to be an issue. So we have another kid, a young kid as well, going to be a junior this year coming up. And, you know, he actually played slot receiver for us, but, you know, he's a real shifty kid. And so we're going to give him some looks at tailback this spring. And defensively, you know, that's going to be the question mark. We lose seven starters off the defense. But we have, you know, every level we got some experience. We have, two defensive linemen coming back. We have a linebacker coming back. And then we have, one of our back-end guys, one of our corners coming back. And so, you know, like I said, there's some kids out there that, you know, coming up from the JV program that, you know, really worked hard this off season, gotten a little bit bigger, a little stronger, a little faster, and you know, we're anxious to see what they can do.
Coach, do you have any players other than the young man going to Rutgers that will be going to other colleges that we should hear about in the future?
This signing class right now, these seniors that are graduating, one of our other players is going to Bethune-Cookman. He's a corner. And then we have two guys actually coming up to your neck of the woods up there, Tommy, and they're going to Albright College.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
well, let me tell you this, Coach. I've done a lot of work. My kids all went to Nottingham High School, Hamilton North, and they won the state championship last year and lost in the semi this past season. And one of the star players from Nottingham will be with your young man at Albright College in the fall.
Yeah, and actually we got two players going up. Yeah, we got two players going up there. One's a strong safety, and the other one's a free safety. So, you know, they're excited. You know, I mean, the coaching staff up there is really excited to get some, you know, some Florida kids up there, and they're, you know, hoping to create a little pipeline. And you know, and it's and it's going to, you know, and I told the coach, I said, hey, you know, the kids are there. We have, you know, we don't have the big time D1 guys every year, but we always have those marginal D1, AA, D2, D3 type kids. And so, yeah, it's good. They're excited, you know, to get them up there, and the kids are excited to get up there and see a new culture and a new way of life. And so, yeah, they're real excited. And, you know, so that's – we got some other kids going – we got three kids going up to Bethany College up in West Virginia.
Mm, okay.
So, you know, we work hard to really try to get our marginal kids, our Division II and Division III kids opportunities. And, you know, and it's working out good so far. We've been able to place kids, you know, all over the country. We had a couple kids. One kid went to, you know, Mount Union in Ohio. And, you know, so like I said, we're placing all of our Division II and Division III kids somewhere. And that's good
great.
For them. It gives them a chance to continue to play the game they love. And, you know, our next big prospect is going to be our quarterback. You know, he started for us last year as a sophomore, and he's, you know, he's really getting. Matter of fact, he's already been offered by Tennessee, Mississippi. You know, South Florida's obviously come in, and you know, so he's got a lot of looks and a lot of love and offers already as a rising junior. So
that's,
you know, he'll
great.
Be our next. You know, he'll be our next big BCS. Prospect. So, you know, that's the positive, that, you know, even though we have to replace some guys on defense, you know, if there's any position you want to have some experience at, it's quarterback. So, you know, we feel good about that, and we feel like we can build around him. So,
you know, guys, let me interrupt just for a second to say that the Flyers game is on, and it's on NBCSP. So if you get NBCSP, you can get the Flyers Ranger game on air. I just got it, and still nothing, but the Rangers are on a power play.
That's a bad thing right now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, actually, the way the Rangers' power play's been, it's actually a good thing.
0-for-20. 0-for-20 the last one.
Yeah, and we scored. I think we scored. Coburn scored a shorthanded goal last night on the Rangers' power play. So.
Yeah. They saw. I think they started off 3-for-8, and then they went 0-for-20 after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is a great match. It'd be a Vinny the Cavier, you know, Marty St. Louis, Brad Riches for the Rangers, Vinny for the Flyers. You got Adam Hall, Dominic Moore for the Rangers. And these guys are friends of mine. I'm watching the game, guys. I don't know who to vote for. The Flyers have my blood right now, or the Rangers of Marty. So I'm just watching them. I have a win at any side right now. So, but, Coach David, all the young kids, you know, they have a great coach in yourself, and you're such a great role model up there in that. So we'd love for you to have free to come up and see a Tampa Bay Storm game and meet some of the kids and some of the players of the AFL.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, Frank had just mentioned, you know, that he was going to get us some tickets. And so, yeah,
sure.
we're excited. Yeah, we have,
yep.
Matter of fact,
that's
a couple
me then,
Dave. Players.
I'm your man.
All right, yeah. So, you know, we have a couple former of our players, you know, that, you know, obviously Adrian McPherson was, you know,
right.
He played for me when I used to coach at Southeast, and then
right.
You know, and then Joe Hills, and so, you know,
yeah,
so,
the Smith
yeah,
brothers,
I said, yeah, well, our kids, you know, our kids would love to come on up and watch.
Well, I'll give Frank the information on Saturday when I see him, and hope to see you on the May 24th up there, Coach. It'd be great to see
the
youngsters
like
up there.
He'd like to see you on May 10th. Dave, you want to tell him about May 10th?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. We have our you know, as you guys all know, man, it's just getting worse and worse with high school athletics. And so we rely heavily on our golf tournament for our big fundraiser to try to, you know, buy shoulder pads and helmets and just cover the operating expenses. And so May 10th at Greenfield Plantation, the Lynx Golf Course at Greenfield Plantation. It's right off State Road 64, right off, you know, when you get off the interstate there, you head east, and it's right on the left-hand side, you know, in Bradenton there. And, you know, it's a good time. We're basically sponsored through Beef O'Brady's, premier beverage company. So, you know, there's going to be plenty to drink. You'll have Bacardi and Jack Daniels drinks all throughout the course with beer, and you know, and then afterward, the after parties at Beef O'Brady's, and you know, they provide a buffet and also more complimentary drinks. So it's really a great deal. It's only $65 per player, and you know, like I said, and it's well worth it. I mean, everybody gets all kind of good things in their goodie bag. Usually we give out a sleeve of golf balls. We get out a T-shirt, a hat. And so, you know, like I said, it's definitely well worth the money. So if you guys, if you love the golf, you know, come on out and see us May 10th. And
well, I'd love to be there, but I'm heading back that day to New Jersey. So.
Oh, no.
Hey, otherwise, Coach, I guarantee you, I'd be Brent is not that far away from me, so we could have all been over there. But unfortunately,
right.
We're heading back to Jersey.
All right, Coach, well, I just did some research, and from Nottingham, there's going to be two kids that are going to be freshmen with your fellows, Steve Adams, a quarterback from Nottingham, whose father's the coach, longtime coach, one of the great people, great educators, just like yourself. And the other one is a real muscle man, Chuck Parker. So your fellas, you can give those names because they'll be hooking up with the Albright Lions come this summer.
Well, that's awesome. And I'll tell you what, you know, I was impressed when I, you know, obviously, you know, when I opened up dialogue with the coach, you know, who recruits down in this area, you know, and I really started to explore their website and check out their facilities. I mean, Albright's really got some outstanding facilities for a Division III
mm-hmm.
program. I mean, it's pretty impressive from their, you know, their stadium and the field and the weight room and locker rooms and so yeah, like I said, our kids are really excited about that.
Coach, how about your young man that's going to go to Rutgers now? Is he will he be a redshirt, do you think, or will he be able to play the first year?
You know, listen. Obviously, you know, being an alum, I follow Rutgers a lot. They, you know, they want him to come in and play right away. You know, they never really got the production they thought they were going to get out of Savon Huggins. You know, Savon Huggins was their guy, you know, that was the big, you know, he was supposed to be the guy that was going to take over after Ray Rice. And,
right.
And he never developed into that guy. And as a matter of fact, this past year, you know, he ended up getting supplanted as the starter by a walk-on. You know, they there was another kid that got injured. So basically the third string back they had, who started off as a walk-on, ended up earning a scholarship, you know, when he became the third team back. And, you know, and he became the workhorse. And,
your young guy has a shot to step in and really play this first year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a big kid. Mm. He's, you know, right now he's 6 foot, 215. And so I think he's physically durable enough. And, you know, I mean, he runs a 10-900. And
he's
going
to need it playing the Big Ten.
Yeah.
He's going to need all of that.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he can, you know, like I said, he can flat out fly. And, you know, and he's a, you know, and they're aware of him in the Big Ten. He, you know, he had offers from Michigan and some other Big Ten schools. So,
good.
You know, they're definitely aware of him and like I said, where he's going to Rutgers. And so, you know, it'll be interesting. I think, if he can step in and play at a high level, you know, I think it'll take some pressure off of Nova. You know what I mean? I think, you know, that's been Nova's issue. You know, he hadn't had a run game, you know, these past couple years. And like I said, they were really counting on it with Savon to really be that guy.
Maybe you get a little pipeline going up there with some of your young players, maybe even that quarterback you talk about that you're so thrilled with.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, it's amazing that these Florida kids, they're excited about going into the Northeast and seeing a different culture. And, you know, and they don't get, you know, they're not intimidated by the cold weather. And, you know, they're, like I said, it's really an exciting time for them to, you know, you always want what you don't have. And so, you know,
right.
We sent kids, you know, we had two kids go up to UMass. And, you know, so like I said, you know, the Northeast, you know, is really starting to, you know, get more kids out of Florida because they realize that, you know, kids are not afraid to leave Florida. So,
right.
You know, they're really working Florida a lot more than they had in the past.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, but Shiano said that when he went to Rutgers. And,
yeah.
You know, coming from Miami, he was going to recruit Florida.
Yep. And, you know, and like I said, a lot of the guys that I make contact with and develop a network with, you know, when I go up in the summer and I work their camp. You know, it's the same deal. You know, like I said, when I bring, you know, we have that nonprofit organization that gets to take kids up there. And when, you know, when these kids, you know, when these coaches actually talk to these kids, you know, they realize that, you know, they're not afraid to leave home. And so that gives the coaches, you know, excitement and an opportunity to come down and recruit them. Whereas, you know, in the past, everybody just figured, wow, that Florida kid's not going to come up here. It's too cold. It's too far away from home. And, you know, like I said, they've realized that, no, there's kids down there. There's talented kids down there and that are willing to relocate and move. And so, like I said, they're working our area a lot harder, more diligently now than they have in the past. So it's a good thing. It creates opportunity for our kids down here. You know,
we just don't
have enough, you know, Division II and Division III schools, so we don't have enough opportunity for our kids in Florida. So, like I said, it's given them you know, a lot more chances to continue playing the game they love.
Exactly.
You know, I'll tell you another school, Coach, Monmouth. You know, it's very interesting. They seem to be drawing some really good players, and some from the South. Because it was interesting, I was talking to mother of one of the top players in our area down in suburban Atlanta, and he had a lot of offers, Louisville, Naval Academy, and he's going to Kennesaw, of course, which is going to start football in the fall because he's on a five-year program and he's getting five-year scholarship, and they're going to be playing Monmouth. So here you got all these schools south, in that league that we're going to be going up and playing Monmouth over in Monmouth County, New Jersey.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing was, you know, my grandson played at Riker, and you know, they never were allowed to give athletic scholarships. They'd all be academic. But now the Northeast Conference has changed a little bit. Monmouth, of course, was in that, and they did execute some scholarships earlier, but Wagner just developed a scholarship program about 4 years ago.
Well, you know, the Patriot League's given scholarships now too, Don, where it used to be just grants, you know, and now they're giving them.
Well, you pretty much have to, I guess, to be competitive.
Right.
If you know, I mean, even the Patriot League, and, you know, you're talking there about, you know, Lehigh and Lafayette and Delaware. Delaware's a Patriot too, aren't they?
Right.
No, they're in the CAA. But you're right. Navy and Army are in for basketball, and Bucknell for Fordham.
Fordham just got a couple of great recruits for basketball. That's the best recruiting, looks like the best recruiting year for Fordham in a long, long time. I mean, they haven't really been a force in the A-10 anywhere, you know, in the whole time that they've been in there. So nice to see that they're finally getting some players to be competitive.
Mm-hmm. And the main thing about that, the kids from Florida getting, you know, going up to these great schools in the Northeast, like you say, Bucknell, Lafayette, Albright, the good quality education, they're better in their futures, Coach. And I think it's a great move for them to recruit the kids and to get away from home, get away from Florida, see a different environment, and getting a great education from a northern school.
Yep. And that's exactly right. And so, yep, our kids, they're excited. They're excited. You know, they when they went on their recruiting trip, I think Albright's only about an hour outside of Philly, correct?
Yes.
Good luck with your spring program, and after 19 days in the game, you're going to know a lot more than you know tonight. So we wish you a lot of luck, and hope that these young kids that you're looking forward to get a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on, fellas. Have a good night. Go Flyers.
You too. Take care, Coach.
Anytime, Coach. Thanks for coming on, Coach. Wow, that's guys didn't get better than this. Two great coaches we had starting off the program here. And it's still 0-0 Rangers and Flyers, less than a minute to go.
Yeah, Frank, Dan was just trying to get me, so I think he may be trying to get you.
Yeah, I was trying to get him. He was on the phone with you.
Oh, okay. Okay, great.
Well, I'll tell you, the Flyers got a little bit lucky, Tommy. They gave one away right in front of the net a few minutes ago, and nice move by the goaltender, and he shut them down. But, boy,
Steve
they gave
Mason,
one away.
But this is so
right
funny.
Now, there's 44 seconds to go in the first period.
What Don about this game is so funny. Vinny and Marty St. Louis and Brad Rich is all great friends. And they've been showing, NBC has been showing Vinny the Cavi and Marty St. Louis. It does. It looks strange to see them in a different uniform at the end of April. I'm used to seeing them
against each other.
Yeah, against each other. I'm used to seeing these guys, you know, have the playoff beard going on, go down to talk to them out there, and they should be playing with the Lightning. So is Adam Hall, Steve Downey, and also Dominic Moore. All were my go-to guys when it's something, when they would lose a game. I'd go up to them and say, guys, what's going on, especially Marty St. Louis. A quick story before Dan Baker comes on. Marty St. Louis,
Dan Baker's
okay,
here.
No. I'd like to welcome to the program the best PA announcer in Philadelphia sports history, and also the Major League Baseball and also the NFL, Mr. Dan Baker. Dan, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great.
Well, I'll tell you, after you hired Roger to do those games, I mean, I don't know what to say. It just goes to show anything can happen in this sports business. Well, I'll tell you, Roger was an important part of the Philadelphia sports scene.
Does that mean
well,
he went
you know
for your
what,
coffee,
Dan, after he just criticized me like that, I won't say what the compliment that Larry Schenck just said on the email about his new book and everything. You know, but it was being nice to Don, but I won't say it now.
Uh-oh.
We did a show with Larry a couple of Monday nights ago with a new book, and I'll tell you, I wish him the best of luck with it. And but Dan, it's always a pleasure to have you and talk to you. And you've got so many different fingers and so many different fires. You can almost talk about anything in the world of sports in Philadelphia or the surrounding area.
Don, I've got all those fingers in different pies, hoping that one day I might be able to scratch the surface of the gold mine that you founded many years ago.
Whoa! I'm saying there may have been a mine there, but there wasn't any gold.
Oh, no.
Well,
here you go. Welcome to Wednesday night, Dan.
I know. It's a lot. Roger always tells me how much fun it is, and I know from having been on here a couple times myself. They just finished that first period up at Madison Square Garden at 0-0, the Flyers and Rangers, in Game 7 of their first-round Stanley Cup playoff game.
You know what's amazing, guys, that Dan is the senior PA announcer in Major League Baseball. And, you know, as young as he is, when you think about it, it just shows how young he was when he started out. And all the changes, you know, the ups and downs of the Phillies and in recent years mainly up. So it's been a great run for you, Dan.
Well, I've been very lucky. You know, I just love the job so much, and you know, you need to have some good fortune to last at anything so long. You need to have good health. You need to have, you know, ownership and management, you know, that likes your work. You know, there can be a change in ownership, a change in management. They might want a different style. They might want a particular individual. And, of course, you serve at the pleasure of ownership, and all of you guys have you know, worked for various organizations, and you know that. So I think it's a combination of things, and maybe not the least of which is luck that allows you to last so long at something. And, you know, another thing is that there's a lot of talented people in our profession, you know, sports announcing, who start as PA announcers or who at some time have a public address position, but they use that as a stepping stone to the higher profile television and radio jobs. But I don't know whether that opportunity would have ever come my way for one of those high profile jobs, but I've just loved this so much. I knew that from the time that I started 43 years ago, this was where I wanted to stay.
Well, Dan, how could you possibly lose? You're a commissioner. You're an athlete. You're in charge of radio and TV. A university. I mean, you had every good job in the world.
Well,
hey, Doc,
don't
forget that he's working in South Philly. He's married to a woman by the name of LaSpada, and all those guys down there that carry Gats are Italian, so nobody's going to fire him.
And also, Kathy LaSpada is from Chester High School.
Chester, Pennsylvania,
Frank.
That's right.
All right.
I'll tell you one thing, he's got the greatest wife in the world.
Sit down on the beach
in
Ocean City and sit and talk to my buddy Jay Nolan.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll take any support I can get, and if Kathy and her family, and I know they're behind me 100%, I'm very fortunate to have them.
Exactly.
Dan, you know, the one thing that's so important, because not only that, you're away from home so much, doing so many different jobs, and you have to have 100% support within the family. You certainly
right.
got a wife that jumps right in, and she's got both feet right behind you, right there.
You know, that's so true. My wife is a very friendly person. She's a self-starter. She does a lot of volunteer work and, you know, has a great network of friends and family and, you know, does a lot of things with them and has to because, as you guys know, you know, we're out 4 and 5 nights a week, you know, at various
right.
sporting events and other functions.
Exactly.
And she's a very giving person. A very
yes.
giving person.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, most people don't realize the numbers of not only days and nights that you're out, but the holidays that you're working. Everybody else is off, and you're working the holidays, and you're working sometimes Christmas Day and New Year's Day, and people don't realize this. You really have to have a very supportive wife when you're in this business.
Sure. That's true. And that, I think, Don, we can also extend that to the children. Because I've been lucky that I've been able to attend a lot of my children's athletic events and school functions, but there's also a bunch that I missed. And, you know, because of, you know, conflicts with my own sports schedule. And, you know, so the kids, you know, they want that support there. You know, I know my kids always look forward to that. I always look forward to being there with them, you know, to support them, you know, when I could. And
right.
So it's really, you know, not only your wife, but your children, you know, the whole family. And you can imagine if you've got a family that discourages you, a wife that discourages you from being out, you know, you can be confused about just, you know, what you should do or how much you can do.
You know, Dan, one of the great stories that you know, it's probably unknown to many people, was that you and Pat Delsey did the first out-of-the-country college football game. What was that, in 75, I think, right?
I believe it was 78, around 70, the Mirage Bowl. With the
Temple Mirage Bowl, yeah, in Tokyo. And I'll never forget when you came home, and I still have the Yasumori Giants little bag that you gave me. I'll never forget when you came home and you told me what some of the Japanese, they wanted to know why they were the Temple Owls and why they weren't like XYZ Corporation Owls, you know, because everything over there was a sponsored team. And just look at over the years the way teams, venues have all now have sponsored names.
Yeah, you know, we like to, I think that we Americans like to think that we're always the ones in the forefront, you know, the trendsetters and initiate the, you know, things. But here, the Japanese were way before us with corporate names for arenas and stadiums and even the teams themselves. And of course, it was a huge revenue generator for them. So, and now, you know, a lot of, you know, most American venues seem to have a corporate name.
Yes. Hey, Dave, if you could hang on for a minute, we got a special guest. This gentleman's hosting a Worlds event in September. I'd like to welcome the owner of All Sports Arena, Mr. Matt Gary. Matt, welcome
aboard. Hey,
gentlemen. And how's it going, Matt? You're talking to Dan Baker of Philadelphia Phillies legend voice, Mr. Don Henderson and Roger Hendler are legends. And Matt, how's it going right now? Any tickets for your world event? Tell us about that.
Well, as you know, I had a great meeting today with somebody with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I believe we're going to start getting some of that support, which is huge. And we're working right now on trying to get some sponsorships to get the facility where it needs to be. Besides that, it's just a lot of work, Tommy, as you know.
How did exactly our young lady from the USO, did you get her 20 tickets?
Yes, I messaged her. And I told her to come by, and she said she would definitely come by. So whenever she's ready, she's going to come get them.
Now, how do people contact you, Matt, for, like, I know you before you go on the ice, how do people contact you for the sponsorship or some tickets or just anything in general about the tournament?
They could call us, 727-845-7808, and then, or they can email us at allsportsarena@yahoo.com. Believe it or not, I'm not going on the rink to play right now, Tommy. I'm taking the week off to rehab my own body, and I'm at a mixer where there's a lot of about 140 businesses right now, so I'm networking.
Okay. I didn't know if you were doing that or not. That's great,
say that telephone number again, because most people don't have a pen and pencil sitting right next to them while they're listening in. So go a little slower and give that
good
number
point
again.
Yeah, I'll take that New York out of me. 727-845-7808. You know, a little bit of what Tommy was talking about is the World's Ball Hockey Event. Teams from Canada, Slovakia, Greece, Bermuda, we could keep going on. The event's been sold out now. It's so bad that the teams are begging them to still let them in, but we ran out of times to book the actual games, and it's going to be probably one of the biggest things that the town where I'm at has ever seen. And our goals are just to make sure that these people are happy, so in the future we keep getting these events here in Florida.
How many
you could probably have those games
now
going to 24 hours a day.
Here's the surplus to that is it's a world's event, so we want to keep it with class. So we don't want people starting a game before 8 o'clock in the morning, and we don't want them ending after 10 o'clock at night, because we want them to have a life while they're here as well.
How many teams are coming in?
I'm sorry?
How many teams are coming in?
They stopped at 24. They just couldn't put any more in.
Wow. It's such going to be a great event, Matt. We're going to have Jason Kelmore, a Stanley Cup champion from the Tampa Bay Lightning, is going to be honorary spokesperson there. We're trying to work in Emerald Greens, Matt, and also the hotels in Oldsmar, the Hampton Inn, and also the Hilton Inn down there for a couple overflow for your hotel space up there. Those were confirmed this week. So, Matt, we're off to a great start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting, but yet still a lot of light at the end of the tunnel. And things that have to get done. And starting next week, we're starting to do the rehabilitation of the building. The bathrooms are being redone. And I'm blessed that the Tampa Bay Lightning have given some of their volunteer hours, and they're rebuilding the locker rooms for me.
Oh, that's great. That's
great.
Boy,
that's great.
Great news from the meeting today. So that's fantastic, Matt. And hopefully we'll get this thing rock and rolling, Matt, and we'll get everything rolling. One more time about how can the fans log on to for your great event coming in September?
Well, at all times you could always go to our website, which is allsportsarena.com. And if you're interested in being a sponsor and getting your name out there to approximately 1.5 million people in all these countries, you can call me at 727-845-7808, or you can also contact Tommy. Tommy's on board with us.
Great.
Looking forward to doing that. It's going to be fun to do. So, Matt, you better go back to networking and that. So, always a pleasure to have you on, sir, and looking forward to working with you in the near future, and I can't wait for this event. I wish it was tomorrow. Get everything done today. Get it ready for tomorrow, Matt.
I'm not so sure I'm ready for that to be tomorrow, Tommy.
Tommy's ready, but Matt isn't.
Yeah. I'm ready for anything, Matt. You just stand there.
Thanks, Tommy.
Man, you know me, I'm 24-7. You know that.
Yeah, Tommy. When I wake up at 3:30 in the morning every morning thinking about things I need to do, I know that it's not tomorrow. Thanks, Tom.
We can call me anytime. I'm always open.
Tommy would love that, Tommy. 3:30 in the morning,
that.
Matt calling you.
You heard that. When his wife starts complaining that he's getting calls at 4 a.m., you heard it, boys.
I know. Matt, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for coming on tonight. We'll talk to you
thank
next
you.
Week.
Thank you. To the gentleman on here, thank you so much for listening to us. And you guys have a great day.
Take care, Matt. Good luck.
Dan, at the top of the show, we started talking about Dr. Jack Ramsey, and I know you knew him well, and maybe you'd have a comment or two. A great loss to Philadelphia at the sports.
Well, when you talk, Philadelphia has always been known as the cradle of coaches for basketball coaches. And you looked at, you know, some of the great coaches in the Big Five, and Harry Litwack and John Chaney at Temple, and Al Severance and Rolly Massimino, Jack Kraft at Villanova, Chuck Daly at Penn, Jack McCluskey at Penn, Dick Carter, you know, Jim Lynham at St. Joseph's. Of course, Phil Martelli's there now. They've had some, you know, great coaches over the years.
Paul Westhead, too. Dan, Paul Westhead, won't forget him.
Paul Westhead and, and then a lot of these guys went on to the pros. You know, Jack McKinney, who also coached at St. Joseph's, he coached one of those Laker NBA championship teams, as did Paul Westhead. And so, in fact, that Jack Ramsey's son-in-law is Jim O'Brien. Yeah, he coached in the NBA and coached at the collegiate level with great success. But Jack Ramsey, my goodness. At St. Joseph's, he coached for 11 seasons. He had like a 77% winning percentage. He took the Hawks to 10 NCAA tournaments in 11 years. He took them to a Final Four in 1961. Mm-hmm. They took third place. They lost to Ohio State in the national semifinal with Jerry Lucas and John Havlicek and Larry Siegfried and them. And then they beat the Utah and Bill the Hill McGill in the consolation game for third place in the 1961 NCAA tournament. And Dr. Jack Ramsey's St. Joseph's team in 1965 was the preseason number one team in the country, according to Sports Illustrated. They were led by Cliff Anderson and Matt Gukas Jr. Of course, Matty Gukas, I believe, broadcast the Orlando Magic game down there for many years, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes, he did.
It's a great basketball town, you know, the Big Five and the Philadelphia Warriors and then the Philadelphia 76ers and the high school basketball is outstanding here also. But, we, you know, when you talk about, you know, the great coaches, you know, Fran Dunphy is another, you know, current great coach. You know, he coached at both Penn and Temple in the Big Five. But when you talk about all of the great Big Five coaches, I think if you had to pick one who would be at the top of the list, it would be Jack Ramsey.
Amen. I'll tell you, you know, also, Dan, we can't forget the women's side. And look at the two coaches that were in the NCAA championship, Gino Auriemma and Muffet McGraw. Both from Philadelphia, both coached at St. Joe's as assistants.
Yes, the Philadelphia women's basketball tradition is an outstanding one as well. And then you think of Dawn Staley. Dawn, did you broadcast Temple games? I know you did the men's games for so many years. I think you did a few of the women's games, didn't you, when Dawn Staley brought them to national prominence?
Yeah, Dawn Staley did, and of course she went to Virginia first and played under W. Ryan, and now she's doing what South Carolina. She's doing a terrific job down there.
Tremendous job.
Yeah, you had Debbie McKee out of Chester who went to St. Joe's and graduated, went back there and coached. She played there and went back and coached, and then she went to Immaculata.
a very young lady, Kathy Rush, who won a national championship, what, twice?
Yeah, right. Hall of Famer. Right. Hall of Famer, Kathy Rush.
Yes,
you
right.
know, in talking about coaches, and we were talking about wives earlier, when my wife went to Chester High School, the point guard on that team was Bo Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
who was
right,
also
right.
Who was also Kathy's boyfriend at the time, and
uh-huh.
of course Bo took Wisconsin to the Final Four this
right.
year
yeah.
in the NCAA, and just you know
she,
losing.
She had a boyfriend
Kentucky.
Before you.
That's right.
Yeah, I told she had a few before me, and I told her you know if you stuck with him you'd have a lot more money.
Oh no. Try it again, guys. Yep. Here we go.
Yep.
This goes to prove that money is not everything.
Oh, that's.
But it helps, right, Don?
Hey, Dan, can you share with the guys what you share with me off air here? What you were doing prior to our show?
Well, I was writing a testimonial letter for Dick Allen.
Right.
There's a grassroots. Program that is trying to get the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, to reconsider Dick Allen as a member.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
Of course, in fact, they're going to have tomorrow at 10 o'clock. They're going to have a vote in Philadelphia City Council for the City of Philadelphia to get behind this initiative, and of course, I'm sure that's going to pass easily.
Right.
When you think of what Dick Allen accomplished, as it is, his career numbers compare favorably with a lot of baseball players who are already enshrined in the Hall of Fame. But you know, when Dick came along, and that rare combination of power and speed mm-hmm. really hadn't been seen in Philadelphia before. You know, somebody could hit. With that kind of power and run that fast as well. And, of course, he was the Rookie of the Year in 1964. That was the year that the Phillies came so close to getting the National League pennant with a 6.5-game lead and 12 to play under manager Gene Mock, and they couldn't bring it home. Of course, the Cardinals overtook them. The Phillies suffered a 10-game losing streak in that those final 12 games of the year, and you know, the Cardinals overtook them and went on to beat the Yankees in the World Series. But you know, Dick Allen was among the home run leaders and RBI leaders in the National League, and in the mid-60s also among the average leaders. So he, you know, hit for average, he hit for power, went over the course of the Cardinals and Dodgers, and then later played for Chuck Tanner with the Chicago White Sox,
right.
was the MVP in Chicago for the American League in 1972. Returned to the Phillies in 75 and 76, where I had the privilege of introducing him at Veterans Stadium. You know, I guess, you know, only time will tell. There are... You know, other players, you don't want to knock anybody, but there's a number of guys in the Hall of Fame, and Dick's numbers certainly not only compare favorably, they're much better in some cases. And
well, one thing you said right there, Dan, is absolutely true, and that is that, you know, when you look at Dodger Stadium, you play during the day, it was very tough to hit, or nighttime, mm-hmm. it was very tough to hit a ball out of Dodger Stadium, but when he went to St. Louis, where Stadium was really tough to hit a home run, and the White Sox at Comiskey Park was no picnic either. So he hit home runs. He hit home runs to lead the league at different ballparks that were very, very difficult to hit the ball out.
Sure.
Yeah,
hey guys,
Zach.
He was a great player. We're joined by a fellow who's the president of the Florida State Youth Spring Football League, Mr. Sandy Beckett. Sandy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, thanks. Is that Frank?
Yes.
Yeah, you're talking a lot of legends here, Sandy. Dan Baker,
we have
legend. This is called Legend Day. Dan Baker, the legendary PA for the Philadelphia Phillies and Philadelphia Eagles, Don Henderson, a Philadelphia legend, and Roger Hender, or Atlanta legend. So this is we call this Legend Hour. I'm just a little idiot. So welcome aboard.
Well, I guess I'm lowering the bar.
Rangers just scored a goal.
Yeah, it's one nothing Rangers.
Oh no.
I guess I just lowered the bar then, because I'm not sure how much of a legend I am. So.
You're a legend in your own mind.
Wait a second, I'm a Wednesday night, that's for sure.
Sandy, can you tell us how many kids you had participate this year in the program?
Yeah, I got a program. It's been going for about 8 years, and I have, I think it's upwards of 35 to 4,000 kids that operate within the program across the state of Florida.
Wow.
Yeah, we're the largest statewide tackle 8-on-8 spring football program. We play football outside of the normal time in the spring. So it started 8 years ago and just grew from there.
That's been any teams in the Tampa Bay area?
Yes, I have multiple teams in all areas. So from Jacksonville all the way down to Palm Beach, and from Titusville all the way across to Tampa, and Fort Myers, Ocala, Gainesville, and everywhere in between, even some of the country areas like Fort Meade and Stark, Florida. You know, I have teams that participate in the program. So
how many teams overall do you have, Danny?
200. I believe this year I had over 227 or something like that, somewhere in that range.
Boy,
220.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, they're spanning across 7 divisions. So some of the divisions have upwards of 40 teams in it. So the team that comes out as the state championship, as a state champion, pretty much has to put away around about 40 teams, you know, by default, of course, you know, through a playoff process. So.
And so you just had the state championships this last weekend. And for those of our listeners that are fans of either the Buccaneers or the Florida State, would you want to divulge who your announcer is for the state championship?
Well, his name is actually Greg. He's a good friend of mine, but he almost sounds identical to Gene Deckerhoff. So. The entire state championship, I have a number of people coming up to me and saying, man, these guys bring in the pros. Gene Deckerhoff's up in the announcer booth. But I have to confess, and maybe I shouldn't, but I do have to confess on air that it actually isn't Gene Deckerhoff, but he does have a very good copy, you know, so he'll be proud to know that his name's being wielded around without actually being there.
Oh my God, that's fair. Now, when's your season start?
You know, I start in February, the middle of February, around about the 15th of February. We play a 6-game season, and then we have a four-week playoff schedule that culminates in a state championship. So we start in February. Essentially, most of the kids and the players and the coaches that participate in the program, they come from every single youth program, whether it's WIFCA, FIFCA, Pop Warner, and every other kind, you know. So, but it's a tournament, essentially. We're not a league, so they can enter teams or multiple teams, whichever they like. But it's a regular season followed by a playoff format, so we sort of behave like a league, but we really are a tournament. And then it culminates in the state championship, which is the best team in the West, plays the best team in the East, is essentially how it ended up. And I got 7 divisions, all the way from the little boys at 5-6 years old all the way up to the bigger guys at 15. And so there's 7 divisions all told. So.
One of the nice things that they do is that each team is allowed to pick 4 players to be nominated for the Pro Bowl. And we had the honor last year of having my grandson Ty be nominated, and he played his little heart out. And then this year he got an award. That Sandy, you want to tell the guys about the award?
Yeah, we kind of, I have to be honest, we're unapologetically different to what standardly is run in the fall programs. We're a very competitive program, first of all, and we do things a little bit different in that you know, we do have a Pro Bowl, albeit it's not exactly like the professional Pro Bowl in that, you know, they have obviously got scouts around there finding out how many tackles somebody's got or how many yards. But I believe that we get pretty much a predominance of the good kids. And then we pick and select them. We give them a jersey. That's a really great Pro Bowl jersey I import from Hong Kong, you know. And they get so excited. We go next weekend and play after the state championship. We go and play the Pro Bowl. And then every area, the northeast, southeast, northwest, southwest, are all represented by a team. And I tell you, it's the most amazing thing to watch a bunch of young kids that are playing in different helmets joining together on a team. There's just a feel at that Pro Bowl that is just nothing like anything else, where the camaraderie and the process, it's just unbelievable. But what Frank's talking about is we every year at the state, we select a bunch of kids, like a seven. Well, we actually get nominations from the teams to nominate kids that have shown outstanding community service, whether it be in donating their time, raising money, grade-based, or anything other than football, or doing something really amazing. And we then get all those nominations, and we select seven Spirit Award winners. And this year it was done in honor of my friend John Walters, who was my director of referees for years and years. And seven kids won that award, and Ty was one of those kids. So, and we give a really nice trophy out. We do a whole presentation on the Jumbotron, and then that kid goes and tosses the coin at the half, and that's another thing that's just I actually don't announce it because I'd cry. So I did it for a couple of years, but I bawled. I cried every time. I'd read these kids' bios, and I'd be like, oh, my gosh, I'm so pitiful compared to them, you know. I mean, I had a kid who designed helmet, you know, that one of those things that when kids crash into each other with a helmet, it measures the amount of impact. I mean, this kid was amazing, you know. So, talk about legends and feeling under the bar. So anyway, my announcer announces, and then I just shake hands and split.
How did you ever decide to get involved in an endeavor like this?
Well, you know, here's what's crazy thing about it. Have you got an hour and a half? No, I'm just kidding. here's what happened. My son actually plays at the University of Central Florida. So, when he was younger, him and his brothers, they were pretty good football players. And the one day, Brandon came into my office and said, man, you know, I don't want to play baseball anymore. And I don't want to demean baseball because that's not my intention. But he just said, look, you know, whenever it was football practice, he'd be ready an hour in advance. Whenever it was baseball, I'd be like, Brendan, it's 1 minute to go before practice, you know. Oh, do I have to go? So anyway, he came and he asked me, can we play football all year round? So I said, well, sure, maybe. Let's see if there is some. So I actually Googled it, and I couldn't find a spring program, and except this one little one that was run out of, like, Arizona or somewhere, and they did this sort of franchisee kind of an approach here in Florida. There was only actually, the first year we did it, there was only two teams, us and another one. So anyway, we joined and we started, and every week we'd play the same team. And every week the boys would ask, who are we playing this week? And I'd go, well, it's the Chargers. And they'd go, oh, we're going to beat them this week, you know. It's amazing how kids look at things, you know. Next week, same thing. Who are we playing? The Chargers. Oh, we're going to beat them this week. So anyway, from there I thought, well, this is crazy. It's so popular. And I started it the next year with eight teams. I take that back. In 2008, I started with 12 teams. 12 teams just in a local park here playing in the dust. We moved up to some cow pasture up in Pasco, but it grew to 39, went to 75, 116, went to 147. Wow. Last year was 186, and this year, like, over 220. So it just grows, you know. I just can't stop it. It's actually, it's got a life of its own now. So.
Well, you wonder why there's so many outstanding football players in the state of Florida. When you talk to the coaches, as we have tonight, along with yourself, you see the number of kids that play football and play football all year round, you can certainly see why the recruiters want to come down here and find kids for their program.
Absolutely, Coach. I tell you, our slogan for our program is actually real football players play in the spring. So that's our little marketing slogan, and it's the truth. basically what we have is all the kids who, you know, the others go off and play the baseballs and the whatever they want to go and play, and but the ones that really love football, they stay in the spring and play. So our competition is just brutal. It really is. I mean, to win it all, you got to get the travel type component to it. It's really tough to win it, you know. You have to go through all of these things. But, yeah, I mean, if the recruiters just even smell the rat, what we have on that field last Saturday, you know, they're all over it. I know they'd be. We see the best kids. There's three kids actually playing in college right now that have played through my program. You know, the Andre Davis, wow, is 81 out of USF, and Chris Moore is the big-time wide receiver out of Cincinnati, you know, number 15. So these are kids that have played with us. So, yeah.
Well, that's such a great thing, Coach. We have to get you guys down to Tampa Bay Storm game next year before your season starts or right after your season starts, hey, and honor the championship team. I'll talk to Frank about this on Saturday night.
Yeah,
so I'd be,
yeah,
I'd
love to do it, you know. I that's probably one of my weaknesses was the marketing side, you know. I mean, I'm an old soccer coach, as you can tell from my accent. I'm actually not a football guy.
Oh, soccer's a great sport,
you know,
I tell you, you know.
it's the word that, you know, you stole our football. It's actually a football coach, but I can't say that here, obviously. But yeah, so.
Where's our goaltender in the right wing, right?
Which, that's actually what I played, number 7. I was the right wing. I think they call it a different name now because, you know, I've gone over the hill, so I think they've changed it to sweepers and, you know, inside run and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, I don't know. I used to play a right wing coach, and I was going down the field. This is back in Philadelphia for a Saturday morning league. So I'm running down the field, right? I had a wide open, wide off shot to the goalie. I pulled my muscle.
Uh-huh.
So I had to lift
off the
field.
End of your soccer career.
I should have had a shot on goal, but I just tapped the ball on goal and it fell down. So that was,
Tommy has the end of more careers than anybody in sports.
Except golf. That's probably the next one, Don.
Yeah, look, I tell you, soccer's no mean feat. I mean, I see, you know, it's tough to play soccer. You've got to keep running the whole time.
Oh,
you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, you're right. You know, Danny, Frank can probably relate to this because we're about the same age. And growing up in Delaware County, I can remember, and this was older guys that played semi-pro football.
Right,
and,
right, right.
Frank, you probably remember the 69th Street AA. Down at,
sure,
69th,
I used to play
Montenegro.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I remember that.
I want to tell you, seeing the older guys, I mean, they were in their 40s and, like, 50,
mm-hmm,
playing on a Friday night. My buddy Steve Dozer and I used to go down there all the time, and we could not believe how rough it was. And, you know, we're like 16, 17, and we're looking, holy smokes, those old guys, look at the way they're playing.
Yeah,
they beat the Eagles, right?
You know, it shows you started with your group, and then there, you know, there was guys, you know, that were old enough to be their grandfathers playing, that were still playing aggressively.
Yeah.
You know, Roger,
right.
Every city had a, you know, most of the immigrants had their own soccer teams. I mean, they
right.
Every town had a big time soccer team, either Ukrainians or whatever it might be.
Right.
They all had
right.
a team. And
that's right.
Let me ask Stan Baker because he's done almost everything. The
that's
only
right.
guy I can think of in our time, Dan, and maybe you can remember, Gene Hart could do anything. I mean, he could do for crying out loud. Did you ever do soccer?
I did. I did the Philadelphia Adams. The NASL in the early 70s, and I've done a couple of World Cup games at the Lincoln Financial Field when they first opened that up and, you know, brought over some of the great teams from Europe and South America to play, you know, by way of trying to generate interest in soccer in the United States.
Wow, I remember that, Dan. I mean, this is such a – Dan, I remember, like, when the guy came to the plate, I used to – my favorite saying when you used to say, not batting for the Phillies, number 27, Willie Montanez. I used to give a standing ovation for that guy. The way you said that, it was great. I love that.
You know, I
he was on the first team. Right, Dan, he was on the first team the first year at the vet.
Yeah, he was on the 71 Phillies, yeah.
He was the first real hot dog.
You see? Yeah, he was. He was.
He was the first real hot dog, but I always liked Unser. He worked great with him.
One time I was introducing Willie McCovey, and I had a brain cramp. I meant to introduce Willie Montanez, and I announced Willie McCovey. The next day, Willie Montanez looked up at me, and you know, like, what's going on? And the next day, I saw him. He said, Montanez. I said, I'm sorry, Willie. He gave me a big hug. And, you know,
maybe
just,
he thought there was a trade coming.
I don't think I was thinking. You know, it just one of those things. You know, and once in a while, Roger, I thought we were going to learn just a moment ago that you're announcing all those games. You know,
I'll tell you what. Doing soccer, you know, I've said many times, and I, you know, of course, you've done many of them. High school baseball is one of the toughest sports to do because you don't get any real stats unless you, you know, go in and really do some research. But I'll tell you, I did do from ground level at Mercer County College. I guess it was in '81, the National Junior College Soccer Championship. And I want to tell you, for somebody, I mean, my kids all played soccer. I don't know much about soccer, but when you do it at a ground level and on a very cold day, I want to tell you, and you can't see out that far, it's a challenge.
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I was ever involved was when they had the indoor team. And we, you know, we broadcast the indoor game, and I'll tell you, you gotta really work on that soccer because there are a lot of techniques and things that go into it that you don't really know about until you start to work.
Yeah, and
I think the key in soccer, Don and Dan and Tom and Frank, I think is to have a good soccer person with you, because then they can give you insight. Because, you know, I mean, when you're doing, like Dan was doing a national game, or you're doing like I did, when you only saw these teams twice. I mean, the game you're doing and when they did the semifinal, because, you know, they're there as the final four, so to speak. And, you know, you don't know these players. I mean, you know, they're from all over the country. There was a team from Oregon. The one good team over the many years was Florence and Valley. I think that's from St. Louis, and their coach was really a great guy to work with. But that's what you have to have when something you're not that familiar with.
Well, I'll tell you, I think still to this day, and whenever I do a speech somewhere or something, they talk about broadcasters. You know, I don't think anybody, at least that I can think of, let me put it that way, could have done that Russian Flyer game better than Gene Hart. Gene Hart had one of those Russian. He had every Russian name down. I mean, he didn't miss a beat. I've never heard a game broadcast more professionally than that particular game.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he English teacher, Dan, at Audubon High School?
He did teach at Audubon High School, where my brother and sisters and I all went to school, but he taught a little bit later than when I was there.
And he graduated from College of New Jersey, which was then Trent State. And when my wife was there teaching, and he was there then.
Yeah.
Was he really?
I know Sandy has to get on to different things that we get. Can we just let him tell us about the Pro Bowl one more time, so that the kids that will be playing will maybe get some listeners over there to go out to see it. Sandy, can you tell us that again?
That'd be great. I'm so blessed and appreciate that you guys have taken the time to have me on here talking about the FSYFL. Next weekend, well, actually this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I have a Division I and II. Division One is obviously the more experienced players. We do have the Division Two there on Sunday. So Saturday and Sunday at Titusville, we're going to be at Astronaut High School in Titusville. And we're there pretty much from 11 a.m. until probably 6, playing a bunch of games. So if you are there, come out. It's going to be a whole lot of fun, from the little boys all the way up to the big guys. They'll be playing each other sort of, you know, in a round-robin type of a situation. So that's the Pro Bowl for the FSYFL. So we really appreciate the opportunity.
Sandy, one quick question before you get away. How long are the quarters or halves in your games?
Yeah, we play a little unusual game. We do a 22-minute half continuous clock. So the entire game is about 53 minutes. And so it makes it a little faster. But we do that deliberately so that we can start on the hour every hour, you know, and just and play games after each other.
That's a great idea.
Mm. Well, you stole that from soccer. You have to give soccer credit. You stole it.
Just before I bow out, I'm going to tell you a funny soccer story. Is that, you know, when I first came to the country here 20 years ago or whatever it was, I, of course, my kids didn't play much soccer, and so I decided, well, I'll get into the football thing. And I was, because they liked my accent so much, they asked me if I would announce a football game, you know. So, of course, I, you know, being who I am and such a, you know, loudmouth, I was, oh, sure, I'll announce a football game. How hard can it be, you know? So rolled up there, give me the microphone, let's go. Anyway, my kids laughed their heads off when this happened, but, you know, the game's going on, and the kid runs the ball, and he runs over the 50-yard line and onto the 48 of the other team, right? So, of course, I'm doing my whole announcing thing, telling them that the ball's at the 52, you know? So I get grabbed from behind, and there's no 52-yard line in football. There's no 52. I'm like, what do you mean? It's a 50. I know that's a 48. I'm like, oh, okay, fair enough. Well, guys, look, I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate the chance to talk about the FSYFL. I believe it's a really great program. The kids love it, and hopefully we'll grow from bigger to bigger things. And, yeah, I'd love to do anything you guys can put me into, Storm, whatever. That's great. It'd be exciting to do that, and I'd like to take the opportunity.
Okay. I'll get the information from Frank on Saturday night. Love to get you guys in. That'd be great.
Yeah, and thank you for all your all the work with young people.
Yes.
You know what? We need more people like you.
That's the greatest thing in the world. All the congratulations in the world. The Flyers are down now 2-0.
Oh.
And they're in a little trouble with 7:43 to go in the second period. They're down 2-0.
Mm-mm. Oh, boy. Turn out the lights almost.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Take care, Sandy. Good talking to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Well, it doesn't look good in New York, guys. 2-0 Rangers, as Don was saying. And oh, boy. So I don't know. Like, it could be restaurant impossible in like two minutes here. Or the Weather Channel. One of the two up there. I'm getting frustrated being a Flyers fan, a Philadelphia sports fan that I am. Or wanted to have on Dan Baker, a legend voice for the Phillies and the Eagles. And Don Henderson, Philadelphia sports legend. Roger Handler and Frank, all Philadelphia. It's always great to have you guys on every week. This is a highlight of my week. The dogs are all kept away, but this is a highlight of my week. And, you know, Dan, like you said before, everybody has a good time in the show. We know it's Wednesday night. We just kick off the shoes and talk sports. This is at a dining room table, having a good time on a Wednesday night.
Well, Dan, you started off talking about Larry Shankin. Of course, the Baron is a legend in himself, but his new book is something. But you worked very, very closely with Larry for such a long time, and he's got great stories in that book, some funny stuff. Chris Wheeler, of course, worked with him on the book and gave a lot of information. How about Larry Shankin?
Well, he was the dean of baseball PR people for a while there. He started with the Phillies in 1963. So,
wow.
You know, we made reference to 1964, Dick Allen's rookie year when he was the National League Rookie of the Year. And, of course, the Baron is still with the organization. He's now no longer full-time, but he still has something. He has the insider on the Phillies website every day, www.phillies.com, and you can read his comments. He's an excellent writer. And this new book, which I haven't seen yet, I think it's, you know, supposed to come out May 1st or something. Maybe you guys got some advanced copies. But I know he will have done a great job with that. And, you know,
Larry Ball wrote the – Larry Ball worked with him, too. Larry, he wrote the opening for him.
Oh, that's nice. Well, you know, Larry Schenck is now director of alumni relations, and he coordinates. You guys, will, I know, enjoy that Wall of Fame weekend each year when they honor, you know, a member of the Phillies by putting a plaque up on the wall for his great play, you know, as a Philadelphia Philly. And Larry really coordinates that and helps bring back to town previous Wall of Fame inductees. And then on one of the nights, we introduce like 40 or 50 former Phillies players, and you know, Larry Schenck is responsible for all of that. How about the ceremonies that Barron puts together, like the closing ceremonies for Veterans Stadium? Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
that
was great. Absolutely.
Special.
One of the stories that he told me was the toughest one. Well, two of them, actually. If you get the book, you'll have a chance to read about. He convinced Richie Ashburn when he was going into Hall of Fame to walk in from center field. Richie didn't want to do it. There was no way Richie wanted to walk in. Richie didn't want to do it at all. But the Baron talked him into it. And he said, as he explained to him, he said, the longest walk in his life coming. He didn't realize it was that far from center field to get the presentation going. And the other one was when he went to Steve Carlton when he won his 300th game. And he said to Steve, he said, look, he said, oh, you have a standing situation here where you never talk to the press, but here's what I'd like you to do. I'll have the writers ask questions, and then we'll have Harry Callis, after the game, relay those questions to you one at a time. So therefore, the press is getting their recognition, and everybody's going to be happy because you won the 300 games. And the day before, somebody put in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Lefty is going to answer questions. That was the end of that. Call Lefty Schenck down. He said, drop that, boys. That's all over with.
Well, I'll tell you, fellows, the name of the book, I just bought it yesterday at the ballpark, Citizens Bank Park. If These Walls Could Talk. And there's a great line on the back cover. And it talks about how a basketball player named Mike Schmidt overcame bad knees to become a baseball star. How Gene Mock oversaw the player's curfew and check out the actual team scouting reports on Ryan Howard, Jimmy Rollins, and Chase Utley. And the picture is Whitey with Harry and the Pope, Paul Owens.
Oh, wow.
And it brings back great memories. I can't wait to read it. And I did pick it up last night when I was at the ballpark.
Well, I'll tell you, the stories about the Pope. The Pope was a unique individual. he never remembered anybody's name, as you know, Dan, but he was one of the – he could tell talent. I mean, he could recognize talent.
Mm-hmm. You know, I saw Paul Owens when he's down there for the World Series down there in Tampa Bay, and I just thank him for all the great Philly teams. That's me being a Philadelphia fan all my life to watch the Philly, especially in 1980. And I came back on the bus to watch that game. Got in for a scalping price, and I seen the Phillies clinch. And you know, that was such a great game, and what they did in 2008, be part of the media watching our Phillies do that. I was very honored to watch that.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, great picture of Larry Schenck with the late Johnny Callison, 1964.
Wow, hit that all-star home run.
That's right.
Yeah, at Shea Stadium, wearing a Mets helmet.
Guys, we're joined now by a young man who's going to be an all-star. He's comes from an all-star family, Delaware Boxers. Back when we lived up there, there was a young man. In fact, we talked to his uncle last week, Dave Tiberi. Dave and Joe and Nick and Tony were all the boxers that used to work out of Delaware, and you could always see a good fight down at St. Anthony's, inside and outside sometimes. But we're joined by the youngest of the
with gloves and without gloves.
With
right,
gloves
Frank?
And without gloves. That's right. That's right. But we're joined by Joey Tiberi. Joey's
Joey's an up-and-coming boxer. He's a good friend of ours, a good friend of the programs and of the Saturday night programs. And, Joey, we wanted to welcome you with Don and Roger, Tommy, and Dan and myself. And why don't you tell us about this exciting news you have for us for May 9th.
How you guys doing?
Good.
I got a little bit of a cold, so just work with me. May 9th is actually a pretty big fight, actually the biggest fight in my career. I've only had one six-rounder so far going into my career, and that's because I pretty much pressed the issue that I wouldn't be fighting any more fours. I mean, I just turned 28, and I didn't want to get to the point where I wanted to call somebody out, but I kind of more or less picked who I wanted to fight, and I really haven't fought anybody that I guess you could say was really – not that I fought bad guys, because, you know, everybody has two hands and a chin and a heartbeat, so I don't underestimate anybody. And pretty much I called out that I chose to fight somebody that's got a good record, and they got good credibility, and they got a good name.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really big fight to step up in competition, and with a big win May 9th, that's really going to put me in position to actually take more control of my career. So I'm actually supposed to go out to Virginia tomorrow after work to go out there for a couple of days to train to get in with, like, Andrew Farmer, a couple of Virginia guys that actually have fought the guy that I'm fighting, have a little bit of more knowledge than I have on him. So I'm really looking forward to that. But yeah,
what weight division are we talking about here, Frank? What's the weight division?
Lightweight.
Joey's a lightweight. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go down. Are you going to spar with Frankie or with Spivey or any of those guys?
Well, Frankie's too big, but Spivey, I don't know if we can make it happen because the guys that I'm meeting up with, they do kind of have contacts with Spivey, but I'm not sure how that's all going to work out because the guys I'm staying with are pretty much Andrew Farmer's people. So, I mean, they're actually having a show in June that they asked me to be on. So,
good.
I'll probably stay with them. So, I mean, they're providing me for a place to stay, so I'll probably just stay with them just so, you know, I mean, if I go out there again, then, you know, the hospitality is there and they have everything set up for me, so that'll probably be what we do. And Farmer fought, I'm fighting Tyrell Samuel out of Baltimore, and Andrew Farmer fought him a bunch of times in the amateurs, and Spivey actually fought him not too long ago, so I know they have a lot of information on him, so, you know.
Yeah,
we'll go out there.
He also fought Bilefko, too.
Yeah, he fought Ryan, because I contacted Ryan before we made the fight, and I asked him what he thought about it. He told me, you know, he comes in with a lot of overhand rights, keeps pumping the jab, and Ryan's not really a puncher. I'm more of a puncher than Ryan is, but, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Ryan, because Ryan fought everybody. So, I mean, I definitely asked Ryan, you know, what he thought about it, because I get work from Ryan too. So, I mean, he said it would be a good fight, and it's a good step up, so we made the fight. So now it's just pretty much just, you know, finishing off these last couple, week or so of training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to be fighting May 9th at the Dover Downs. And anybody in the Delaware Valley area, New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, Maryland, it's a great show that they put on. There's a very good show that Joe's on with a guy who just won his third belt in a year and is now ranked number 8 in the world, not too far behind Mayweather or Pacquiao, and could very possibly that's within reach of his reach, with the new Ray Robinson.
Yep.
Yeah. So Joe, this is your second six, right?
Yes, yeah.
Good. And can you tell some of our listeners, you know, how do you prepare for a six? I know that it's tough to get through the first four, but, you know, that extra 12 minutes you've got going between the 3 minutes in and the minute out and in between, how do you train extra for that?
Well, my first six didn't go the full six, so it actually went four. I stopped him at four, so... every fight I train differently. It's always something. I don't like training the same. I might do some of the same workouts and all that, but like I always have a different mentality. Like this fight, I ran, like I've been keeping track on my phone, and I'm like almost at 70 miles training for this fight, and I started probably like, I've only ran about 14 times, and that's almost, we're around 70 miles, so I mean, I still got 9 days, 8 days left to train, but I really wanted to get my legs under me just because I knew it was going to be a tough fight, and I just wanted to make sure my legs were there, and that was really important to me. So I made sure I did. I made sure that being in shape wasn't going to be an issue. You know, we throw a lot of punches in the rounds, and you know, we just trained just to go. We overtrained more than six. So if a guy has to go six, we're not worried about it. You know, we're going to make sure we do what we have to do to win each round. But as far as knowing how to train, I guess more, I really don't have an answer because I haven't really gone a full six yet. It's only my second one. But like I said, when we spar, we do more than six, and when we do our rounds in the gym, you know, all them rounds add up. So it's just putting that good work in and just having good work ethics and just staying, doing something every day and making the most out of every time either I'm running, making the most out of my run or when I'm in the gym or when I'm sparring, just making the most out of every workout just so, you know, the fight's the easy part. I just leave it all in the gym. I don't want to leave the fight in the gym, but, you know, just leaving everything there.
And you're trained by another good friend of mine and another guy that I used to love to watch fight. You want to tell people who that is?
Yeah, it's my dad, Joe Tiberius Jr.
Yeah. This guy could take a punch and could sure knock the hell out of people. And it was always a great show to go and watch Joe Sr. fight. And Joey's coming right along in that pattern. His last one, I was trying to lead him in so he would tell you that he knocked a guy out in the fourth round. That's one of the first knockouts I think that the champs has had in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For your fight coming up in Delaware Park, you know, what's the key to your success? You get the guy in the uppercut or cross hook what's your best punch up there at the key?
I really don't have, like, a signature punch yet. I mean, pretty much what I do is, because I'm a boxer puncher, so, I mean, I just like to work off, like, whenever I hurt him, I just want to finish him. I want to get him out of there. So it's, like, just kind of setting him up for a couple punches, and if you see him get hurt, and just jump on him. I mean, I pack power in both hands, so, you know, I guess, I don't really know what I'm trying to say there. But, I mean, either way, I mean... just trying to finish them off when you get them hurt. If not, then, you know, land my shots and get out, reset. Just stick with the jab. The jab is the most important punch. So everything works off of that. So we've been really focusing this fight a lot on throwing a stiff jab. So and then everything follows behind that. But, yeah, I mean, that's really it.
Was that a key? Does it get that guy in the corner? Did this go after the ribs all the time up there? That's one of the key for boxing right now. Get the guy in the corner and just pound the ribs out.
I mean, it definitely helps if you can do it, but, like, I like to keep the hands moving. I like to touch the body and come over top.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, if their hands are there, they're going to, you know, it's not going to land as clean. It's not going to be a solid shot. So you keep their hands moving, them shots are going to fall, and they're going to feel it. They're going to just, you know, you're sitting there unloading on them or just picking your shots and placing them. I mean, they're all going to fall. The body is obviously a good spot to go, so.
My next question, it's got to be the judging. You know, Frank and I talk about the judging every time we get boxing matches on boxing events on TV and that. And, you know, the judging, I mean, in boxing right now, I think it's, you know, what's your opinion about it? Do you think it's fixed or do you think it's fair in boxing?
It's hard to say because, you know, I mean, when I love watching Floyd. And I'll bet every fight on it. So when I watch him, even if he loses, I'll say he wins. But it's hard to say because, I mean, it's, you know, you gotta take a couple things in, like, into consideration when you really score, like, who's the aggressor, who's applying the pressure, if shots are landing cleanly, if they're not being deflected, who's landing power shots. I mean, it all, you know, being fixed, I mean, yeah, I guess when you're dealing with that type of money, you know, that money's going to talk. So at this level, my level, I really don't have to worry about that. But, you know, at the same time, I do what I have to do to win the round, or at least what I feel I win the round. But scoring it, I just scored how I see it.
I always want to ask that question to yourself or any of the one of the boxers, because a lot of times you see, especially the Olympics a couple of years ago, or guys get in there and I thought they won the fight, and here goes these judges go for the opposition, and that must be such a downer after you're fighting such a great
boxing match for six or how many rounds you go and hear this decision that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's the bad thing is it happened, and, you know, as much people want to say it's a sport, it's also a business, too. So, I mean, obviously, like I said, like more the mainstream HBO and Showtime, I mean, those fights, it's as bad as it sounds, it's more of a business in some aspects with, like, you know, Top Rank and Golden Boy and all that. Like, you know, those fights, somebody has to lose, and then that might generate a fight three times, five times bigger. The more people start, you know, generate more business, more money, and, you know, it just happens. I mean, there's no getting around. It's not going to stop, and it might only get worse, but that's just the nature of it.
You know, maybe you'll have be on a fight card in the future at Delaware Park on Joe LaSpada Day, because Dan Baker's late father-in-law was well-known at Delaware Park, and they have a day for him. They honor him every year, right, Dan?
Ooh.
Yeah, they do. But I wanted to share with our audience that a young Roger Hendler almost became a professional boxer.
Uh-oh.
You know, yeah, one night I saw him beat up a couple of Marines.
Uh-oh.
Marine O'Hara and Marine O'Sullivan.
And it wasn't even
good one. Good one.
We
fun on Wednesday night, guys.
the one thing that again, Joe's being very cautious to tell you that Joe is Joe works a full 8-hour day job. He goes to school at night, and then he boxes, and he takes care of business at home. He's a great kid and a great guy, and
aww,
we can't say enough about the family. The family's always been very very good friends of ours, and they were very good friends of my son Bob's, and we hold them up in with great pleasure to anytime we can do anything for Champ's management or Dave, mm-hmm, or Joey or Joe or anybody. We appreciate everything you do, and Joe, I don't want to keep you. I know you've had a long day, and it's not easy.
And very good luck to you. I hope you come out on the winning side and get the full round six. Will you give it the full six?
And keep us posted. Let us know. But I'll tell you what, Frank,
please,
to follow up on what you said, the acorns don't fall far from the trees.
That's true. And, Joe, the Saturday Night Crew is going to be at ringside. So you'll have Dr. Chris, Ty, and Zito will be there with you, and not only in spirit, but right there to make sure that you know they're there. And I'll be there in spirit. I can't be up there, but I know that you're going to do well like you always do. And I know it's going to be a tough fight, but you know what, Joe? You got it, man.
Thank you.
Everything I've seen.
I second that, Joe. I second that motion.
Everything I've heard, I think you're destined for good things.
You're on your way.
Appreciate your friendship.
Good luck. Have a great night.
Yes,
thank you.
Good
I appreciate
luck.
It.
Good luck. Absolutely.
Thank you.
God say hello to your mom
luck.
And dad for me.
I will.
Oh.
Tell him stop going
wow.
to the 5 o'clock mass so I can get him on my Saturday show.
That's great.
That is time management.
Service. I'm at my 4 o'clock before the storm game, Frank. So
that's right.
He'll be in our prayers, and always the best of luck to him. I mean, my God, it's just an 8-hour day and boxing. He'll be in our prayers on Sunday.
And he's a terrific kid. He really is.
Yeah, before we close out, how many events do you normally do per year? I mean, I know there's a standard contract with the Eagles and the Phillies and so forth, but how many actual contract dates do you have normally?
It's somewhere over 100, but I don't even know the exact number. You know, it's 81 Phillies regular season games, and then there's, you know, some college and high school games that I do for them, and Carpenter Cup high school all-star games, in addition to the Eagles and basketball. So I don't even know the exact. I would say somewhere, you know, above 100, you know, around 100.
Yeah, because you do there's some Drexel games, and then you also did, like, field hockey for Drexel and soccer.
Yeah. I don't even... You know, it's funny, Don, you asked that question. It's a very logical question. But I'm just lucky that they keep me busy.
Right.
I'll tell you what Dan was saying about the Carpenter Cup. I'll tell you, I got to fill in a couple of times for Dan doing that. I want to tell you, that is one of the great experiences to be around those young high school players playing in the Carpenter Cup. They come in by county. Wow. And it's just great competition, isn't it, Dan?
Well, it is, Roger. And tell them about the time that you stopped traffic on the Schuylkill Expressway due to a rules infraction.
You know, what happened is there was a rules infraction, and all the guys in the press box were telling me stop the game. So I yell out, umpires, stop the game. And they said you could hear it on the expressway.
Oh, no.
Dan, I think one thing you could explain, you talk about the Carpenter Cup, but a great number of people, obviously, Rudy's been out for such a long time and his dad, Bob, but people don't really realize who the Carpenters are and how this all got started.
Well, of course, the owners of the Phillies for many years, Rudy's father, Carpenter, the second, bought the team, or his father bought the team in the early 40s and gave it to Rooley's dad to run. And, of course, his father was a big executive with the DuPont Corporation based in Wilmington, Delaware. And the Phillies were moribund throughout most of the 30s and 40s. And when the Carpenters bought the club, they really brought stability to the organization. They put together a good farm system, and of course by the late 40s had a contending team, and the Whiz Kids won the National League pennant in 1950. Rooley took over for his father in 1972, which was the first year that I started doing the PA announcing, and Rooley, of course, was the president of the team until he sold it to Bill Giles' group following the 1981 season.
Gentlemen, we have to end this. Frank said tick, 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 tock. Dan, always a pleasure to have you on the program, and we'll have to do this some other time. It'd be great to have you on. Anytime you want to come on, the microphone's all yours, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dan, take care, Dan.
Great with you.
Thank you.
Continued success, and we'll see when we get back in Philadelphia, but great having you on the show.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing you all.
Yes.
You too. Thanks. Take care. Well,
thank
listen, fellas, have a great week. God bless. The Flyers are down 2-0. Hopefully they'll come back.
Yeah, yes, travel the rain up there. Will you please get some warm weather and stop the rain?
Oh, man, I hope so.
Last couple of weeks of summer, Don, for you.
Well, take it up, Carol. I want it to be warm.
Well, it's going up to 70 tomorrow, and so the weekend's supposed to be nice, so hopefully it'll be good.
Okay.
Frank, thank you very much once again. You did a great job, and what a group of guests we had tonight. That really worked out well.
Yep. Thank you, Don, for coming on. Roger,
Frank's
thank
the
you
master.
For coming.
He does a great job every week.
He's a legend, Mr. Frank's a legend. Wow, what a show, Frank. Thank you for everybody. Thanks for guest Lauren Sandwich for coming on, Matt Gary for coming on, a couple of the coaches for coming on, the boxer for coming on also. Dan Baker, legend, Philadelphia, PA announcer, the Phillies, the Eagles, and once again, Don Henderson for coming on, Roger Hendler for coming on, Frank Carroll, great job of producing the program. I'd like to thank always our sponsor, Bradford White Water Heaters of Ember, Pennsylvania. When you want to purchase a water heater, log on to BradfordWhite.com. Frank, I'll see you Saturday night at the Storm game, and
yes,
we'll
sir.
Talk over what we could do for that football thing and tell them.
Sure.
You tell the coach we'll come up with a lightning goodie for his tournament.
Sounds good. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Frank, and have a blessed day.
Thank you, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just say thank you. It means the world of good to all of us. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in uniform. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Thurbert, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, Pennsylvania Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Mike Hendler, and Mike Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Bain, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Officer Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you, may the winds be always at your back, may the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sun shine softly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hand. Good night.
Shem alek ma yelama, Shem mahezah yelma, Tzon Hashem nevorat fet, Hakuig again ma yelma. Shem alek ma yelama,
Good night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.